Hello and welcome to another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast with me, your host, Pete Brooker. And on this week's episode, we're going to be speaking to women. We're going to be talking about the women in menswear. We're going to be starting with Sarah Ann Murray. She's a fashion director and she's going to be telling me the only time that she wears a dress.
The only time really I wear dresses, this is probably another reason I gravitated towards menswear, and that is that I'm not a very girly girl, and I have a promise to all of my friends that on their birthdays I'll wear a dress, and that's pretty much the only occasion. That or the beach.
That interview coming up shortly. And to commemorate this week's theme, I've hired a female counterpart, so introducing to you Tootsie. Come on, step up to the mic, sweetie. Honey, don't be shy. Say a few words to the audience.
My name is Dorothy. It's not Tootsie or Toots or Sweetie or Honey or Dow.
Oh, Jesus.
No, just Dorothy. Now, Alan's always Alan, Tom is always Tom, and John's always John. I have a name, too. It's Dorothy, capital D-O-R-O-T-H-Y. Dorothy.
It's going to be a long day. I'm also going to be talking to Kieran Summer. She co-founded the New Western Assembly, which is a menswear shop on Redchurch Street. She's going to tell us why her and her sister decided to open a menswear shop.
I think when you go to places such as Berlin and Copenhagen and Stockholm, the boutique culture there is more advanced than it is here, and you tend to get a lot more independent brands. But that's kind of the inspiration for Western Assembly and the reason why we decided to create the brand.
That interview coming up shortly. And I'm afraid, you know what, Dorothy, it's just not going to work out. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to let you go.
Why am I not right, Mr. Carlisle?
Well, for one, you're calling me Mr. Carlisle. My name's Peter. It's not a hard name to remember.
I'm an actress. I'm a character actress. I can play this part any way you want.
I know. I'm just trying to highlight how powerful women can be in a very male-dominated industry, and I'm afraid you're just too girly-girly. You're not tough. You're not threatening enough.
Not threatening enough? How's this? You take your hands off me, or I'm going to knee your balls right through the roof of your mouth. Is that enough of a threat?
It's a start. But hold that thought. We're also going to be talking to one of the best shirt makers in London, Emma Willis. She's going to tell me how to pronounce German Street. Am I saying Germain or German Street?
It's German Street.
I've always called it Germain Street. Well, no wonder people give me funny looks. German Street.
I think that's American.
Right, Germain Street.
That's the one.
German Street. Got it. Nailed it. Okay, so before we crack on, just a little bit of housekeeping. If you're not there already, head over to the website. It's www.menswearstyle.co.uk. There you'll find a lot more blogs, competitions, features, interviews. It's all going on over there.
Yes, I think I know what y'all really want.
Oh, good.
You want some gross caricature of a woman to prove some idiotic point, like power makes women masculine or masculine women are ugly? Well, shame on the woman that lets you do that, on any woman that lets you do that. Shame on you, you macho shithead.
Okay, let's get going, shall we? Here's that interview with fashion director Sarah Ann Murray. Okay, so on the podcast now, we have fashion director Sarah Ann Murray. How are you doing today, Sarah?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Not at all. Sarah, could you just give us a little bit of a backstory about yourself, just your nutshell resume, brag a little, if you will.
I started quite a few years ago, showing my age now, and I did a few courses following university and much traveling. I did a few courses at the London College of Fashion, all to do with styling, personal styling, editorials, photo shoots, along those lines, and learning the creative, the skills that you need to master early on, and had some great teachers. And then I did a little bit more traveling, lived in Australia for a while, and decided that, having worked with a few magazines locally and had a few sort of personal clients, that it was magazines and men's fashion. That was what I was really quite passionate about. And I was very lucky, sort of cut a long story short, I met The Rake when I was in Singapore, and it was perfect. I loved the magazine. I loved the style. And that was 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So I've done a little bit of research on you, learned that you graduated from Birmingham University, where you studied law and French, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
So why the sea change over to fashion?
Do you know, it's funny, I left university and sort of promised, I was on a promise to my parents that I was just going to nip off and go travelling, and that I would be right back to come back and be a solicitor.
That old chestnut.
And I came back to England 10 years later, and so I never really got around to it, in truth be told. I just sort of, you know, pursued a more creative field involving a much more hands-on kind of a role, and I've loved it, never really looked back, and I've got an awful memory. I'd have made a terrible lawyer.
I was just going to ask a question about the college as well. So you went to a London fashion college. What was that like?
Yeah, I did short, small courses there, just to really focus skills. And once I'd figured out what it was I wanted to do, I thought I ought to go and learn the craft. And so my degree, like you mentioned, it wasn't in the arts or anything. It was a really sort of vocational degree. So I realised that whilst it is a very creative job and it's a skills that you can learn, I wanted to sort of be taught by some serious teachers in the London College of Fashion. They're amazing, amazing teachers and a school there, so it was great to go and learn from the experts.
What sort of things can you learn from there, and what skill sets can you pick up? Because I often think of fashion as being really transitional and subjective, so opinionated but also quite disposable. So what kind of
it is, absolutely. And you know, a lot of the great things that I learned was about working with other people, and if especially for personal styling, understanding that you're working with people who have emotions, and that they are the layers you have to get through first, and that it does differ very much from doing editorials and you know, sell it or creating a message about what a suit can do for a man is very on a page, and selling a dream is very different to actually making a man feel comfortable about going out to work every day. And that those are the sort of the biggest things I learned, that one is an aesthetic dream and one is an aesthetic reality. And that was really sort of a deeper meaning and appreciating what this sort of the industry can do.
Okay. So why menswear, Sarah?
I like that with menswear, obviously women as well, there's a lot of history, but with menswear, it's so steeped in the traditions of, be it military or regal traditions, rules and regulations that have formed, be it through social or economic pressures, or, you know, societal norms that men had to adhere to represent where they were, you know, for example, in a class society or in the workplace, and how those rules still are relevant today. For example, you know, why you wear a cummerbund with a tuxedo a certain way up, and it was to, you know, catch your crumbs or hold your tickets when you go to the opera. Really sort of tiny,
awesome.
Minute
like
details. Yeah,
fantastic.
Things like that sort of, they still resonate today, and that they can evolve and they can change. But it seems so strict with menswear, and also it's a great challenge that you have less to play with. And I am being a woman myself, I have the fun of getting ready in the morning, doing the hair and the makeup, the heels, and it's all of, you know, that side of the drama of it. You don't have as much with menswear, less garments to play with. You have less options with hair, makeup, and I quite like the difficulties that you can face with menswear. It's a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And a suit, I'm obsessed with a good suit. So,
but I mean, that surely must be able to cross-pollinate. I mean, women wear suits, obviously, so that can, all of that sort of tailoring can happen in the women's wear as well. Do you have a
it
hand
can.
In that at all?
Absolutely. And it's something I do want to explore, actually, is that with women's wear, everyday street style, casual glamour is really well looked after. But I think women want to wear suits or in the workplace, and super professional women, I think tailoring should be more accessible to them, and not done in a boring, stuffy way or in an 80s power suit way. I think it can be, we should go and look at that certainly in more detail, suits for women.
Yeah. Sarah, could you enlighten me, please, from a male perspective? What are your pet peeves when it comes to men's fashion, in terms of when you see a dude walking down the street? What are you most put off with the most? Apart from mucky trainers. I've already sorted out my trainers. That's fine. But anything else?
Good point with footwear. I think smart, they don't have to be super expensive or super smart, but regularly update your shoes so that they are still in pretty good condition.
Mm-hmm.
Polish them, look after them, and as soon as they're looking a little bit tatty, I'd update them. I mean, you don't have to spend a fortune, but starting at the feet, the shoe wear foot range, I think that's a good starting point. And then, you don't have to spend a fortune, but getting a suit that fits. So even if you buy ready to wear off the rack from a high street store, go and get it tailored a little bit, you know, just have it nipped and and taken in by someone who knows how to make it fit. So it does have the look, it gives, you know, it would fit you better. And that is a, you know, a few basics, I would say. Mm-hmm. And then, another pet peeve, belts with suits, especially belts to matching shoes. Yeah, that cheapens a suit in a heartbeat. If you buy, you know, trousers that fit already, they shouldn't have belt loops. And then it's a sign that the suit is a well-fitting suit. And if you need a belt, it's a sign that it's not a well-fitting suit. Leave the belts for jeans.
Good pull.
Chinos, I'd say. Yeah.
God, I'm writing all this down. This is fantastic. Well, my girlfriend's actually just sorted out my entire wardrobe, so she's kind of sculpted
me. You're lucky.
Yeah, I mean, crikey, I made it all the way through my 30s without actually going out and buying any decent shirts. And so when we were turning up to dinner dates, she just said, look, I've just got to sort you out.
You are so lucky.
Oh, yeah, tell me about it. I mean, she just took me down to TM Lewin and just said, right, just spend half an hour in here. And that's not an advertisement for TM Lewin. It could have been anywhere, but convenient of places.
A local shirt supplier, yes, yeah. I mean, I think the great thing with menswear is that whilst there are these rules that I do love, once you know them, you learn how to break them or evolve them. And, you know, you look at the Italian style, it's very different to British style, and we are perhaps more conservative and traditional, but they have evolved their style, and it's still classic. It's great, but I think men can and should have more fun with their style these days. Mm-hmm. There's so many more options for guys as well. So it's you know, like for example, how the t-shirts become acceptable now to wear with a suit, how it's acceptable to wear, you know, luxury sneakers or trainers.
Yeah.
It's we've come so far. So yes, whilst there are traditions and rules, like you can bend it. And I think, like you say, you know, investing in a few. Just regularly updating your wardrobe. Once the shirts and collars have started to go, throw them and start again.
Yeah, give them a few tweaks. I was actually at a wedding recently, and I was wearing my tux, my very new tux. So I was very happy to be invited to this wedding. And a lot of the women there were having the debate about who was luckier, the guys or the girls, because the guy can just put on a tux and wear that tux to every other wedding, to every other event, to every other award show. But yet a woman has to change. So which element do you prefer? The choice of having something different to wear for each occasion, or would you rather be uniformed?
Oh, I'm a little bit of the worst of both worlds in that I do want to go straight to a suit, but then I also want to change it for every event I go to.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely the worst of both, I think, in that respect. But usually for weddings, I often go for sort of an elegant suit. The only time really I wear dresses, this is probably another reason I gravitated towards menswear, and that is that I'm not a very girly girl. And I have a promise to all of my friends that on their birthdays, I'll wear a dress. And that's pretty much the only occasion, that or the beach. But I think for guys, I think you've got it. I think you're lucky in that if you invest in a well-fitted tuxedo or suit, that can... that is so useful. You don't have to think too much about it.
Yeah,
as long as your accessories are working for the season or the type of wedding, then you're okay.
Yeah, good pull. Maybe I should just change the pocket square every now and again, like an off-white
exactly.
As opposed to a...
Yeah, and then add some spots. I think guys have got it luckier, though. It's a stress for women. You can't have friends see the same dress twice, all of that nonsense. So
I know, yeah. Well, we can even turn up wearing the same tux. I'm like, hey, you got the same tux as me. I'm like, yeah, well, good choice. Yeah. And then dudes will high five each other. I'm like, let's get drunk. So, Sarah, what's an average day like for you then? I mean, I guess you've got a huge client base now. Do you have to go out and advertise, or do you turn people away? What's your calendar like these days?
It's nice, lovely and busy now, I have to say. I left the rake about a month and a half ago. And that was since I'm now freelance, I'm still as busy as ever. It's press weeks, press days this week, so I'm popping into all of the brands and the PRs to go and see the spring summer collections to remind myself, and that's where I get a lot of ideas from for editorial shoots, to see the clothes close up. And that's when you get inspiration. You see sort of a certain trend, or you know, for example, I'm seeing sort of safari shirts at the moment. You think, okay, great, I could do a great story on that. Is it something I could write about? And then you think, okay, well, let's try and find five of the best. Mm-hmm. And then if people are asking me, well, what jacket should I recommend? For example, I saw a great jacket the other day. It was really soft navy blazer. And I think I put it on my Instagram and was sort of like, guys, loads of you are asking me what blazer to get for spring, summer. And this would be the one I'd invest in. So going out and constantly being inspired, that's what I try and do. And then on the other side, logistics for shoot prep, that keeps me chained to my laptop and looking at photographers' portfolios and coming up with the, you know, the right plan and the, trying to come up with mood boards and ideas to work with photographers. And right. Once you get that sort of spark with a photographer, it's fantastic. It's such a great feeling when you can work together and then you go ahead, do the shoot. And that's a really good feeling. And then I've got private clients who want suits and outfits for weddings and Christmas and et cetera, so uh-huh. Then going to from a retail point of view, going to look at what stores are stocking at the moment, all the way from top high end to accessible high street. So it's I'm busy. It's great. And I'm not very good at sort of self-promoting. I don't do all the marketing. If it happens organically, then that works for me. So I don't really put myself out there. I quite like it when the universe just, happens to, come up with a good collaboration, then I'll go with it. I think I'm quite organic in that way.
God, it sounds like a beautiful place to be.
Well, it's sort of working so far, but if I spend too much time at home, I get a little bit angsty. I need to be out and up and doing things.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Sarah, so lastly, I always like to know, do people, like your mates, do they come in and ask for advice, and do you have to offer mates rates, or do you just say, go to my website, here's my media kit? Yeah.
They do ask me for advice, and it's really lovely. It's great, actually. Usually with the guys, it's sort of on the morning of an event that they have to go to, like, oh, I'm getting married today, or I'm going to my friend's wedding tomorrow. What can you do? And I usually at that point sort of take my collection of ties and pocket squares round and sort of, do a last minute bit of styling for them. I happily offer mates rates and or favors. We can take each other out for lunch, or I've got one who's a personal trainer at the moment, so I'm sort of trying to work out, well, if you give me personal training, I will star you.
I like that.
So everyone's a winner. But I'm happy to help people out, because it's such a difficult thing. It's, you really do need an outside opinion at times. You just can't see you have a wardrobe full of things you don't like. It's hard to step out of that. So sometimes it does just take a second opinion, and I'm always happy to offer that.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Sarah. Thanks for your time.
You're most welcome. Pleasure.
If people want to check you out or even ask for a collaboration, it's your Instagram feeds is up at Sarah_Ann_Murray. I think people should just be Googling you and you'll be coming up, and your website's going to be arriving soon as well at sarahannmurray.com, so people can check that out.
Thank you.
That's
me in the hat. I'm usually wearing a hat. That's just to cover bad hair days, to be honest.
Sarah Ann Murray there. And now time for a word from our sponsor.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
You know, times are changing. Ladies can do stuff now. And you're going to have to learn how to deal with that.
It's good stuff. So, Dorothy, have you got anything to add to that?
As a woman.
Yes.
And just as proud to be a woman.
Yes.
And just.
Okay, just hold that thought. We're going to have a chat now with Kieran Sumra, co-founder of Western Assembly. On the podcast now, we have Kieran Sumra, affectionately known as Kiz. She's a co-founder of Western Assembly, a menswear store down in Redchurch Street. How are you doing, Kieran?
Yes. I'm well. How are you, Peter?
I'm fine. Thank you for taking the time out to speak to us. How long has the shop been open?
Well, the shop's been open for 3.5 weeks now, coming up to 4 weeks. So it's our first permanent store that we've had since launching Western Assembly 18 months ago. And the reason myself and my sister, Anita, decided to go into menswear in the first place was because Anita has a lot of experience in menswear buying. She's been a menswear buyer at Burberry for 5 years and noted that there was a really big gap in the market for not high street, not super luxury, but that kind of premium contemporary market. And there's more of a demand than ever for kind of premium contemporary apparel that's locally made and produced with a lot of skill and a lot of care. And that isn't widely available necessarily in Britain at the moment. I think when you go to places such as Berlin and Copenhagen and Stockholm, the boutique culture there is more advanced than it is here, and you tend to get a lot more independent brands. But that's kind of the inspiration for Western Assembly and the reason why we decided to create the brand.
Awesome. Okay, so what's your background then? So your sister did work for Burberry. Have you got any experience in the trade?
Yeah, so Anita worked for Burberry for 5 years, and my background is all in digital strategy. So I worked across various agencies in London, working for brands such as Guinness and Tanqueray, so kind of male skew alcohol brands, as well as some sportswear brands, including Reebok. I worked on Estee Lauder and did some apothecary for brands such as Lab Series and Mac and things like that. So yeah, my kind of background is all in digital marketing, which is why originally we launched as a digital pure play brand. We launched initially just with the website and we had a 1 day pop-up actually just to mark the launch of the brand. And then our first pop-up came slightly after that. So we didn't launch with our bricks and mortar store. It was a website, knowing we were relying on pop-up stores. And as the business developed over the last 18 months, we realized we needed to be a multi-channel store. So our online presence is just as important as our offline. And we see very different contact, as you can imagine, with the customers across both of those. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how Anita's experience in menswear buying and my experience in digital and kind of marketing strategy combines.
And do you find that one kind of bolsters the other, that when people shop online, they can see that there's bricks and mortar, that they can effectively bring something back to a place? You know, it's palpable.
Yeah. So we do always try and tie the link in both of those. So within our website, we'll always have images and things of our physical store. And often when we send out newsletters to our subscribers who subscribe online at westernassembly.com, they often will get a newsletter which hasn't only got information about what's available online, but sometimes we have exclusives in store. So we try and really differentiate our offering in store and online, which I think is really important. People don't necessarily get gripped if you have exactly the same offering online as you have offline. So we try and differentiate that and kind of give people a slight change depending on where they're shopping from.
Sure. Kieran, can I ask you what the footfall's like in Redchurch? Because I used to run an independent fashion shop as well in a place that that had zero footfall. We were literally out in the country, like an alien mothership had dropped a fashion shop in the middle of a field. But the idea was obviously to sell more online and be an online presence. But yet, to entice people to come in the shop, we had to do entirely different deals than we did online. So is it congruent? Yeah. Do people understand the difference generally?
Yeah, they definitely do. In terms of the footfall in Redchurch Street, it's really strong. The thing we find is that the customer that we have in Redchurch Street is spot on for our kind of brand. So you get a lot of people who are looking for independent brands. They're looking for something slightly different, not necessarily mass produced. Whereas when we've worked in other places, we had a 6-month pop-up in Covent Garden, which was incredibly successful. The footfall was higher. However, not every single person who comes into the shop really understands what it means to shop in Western Assembly, and to understand the value of buying a brand from Amsterdam, for example, that isn't available anywhere else in the UK, and the fact that they have really high quality premium Italian linens, which aren't widely available in other stores in the UK. So what we find in, essentially, Red Church Street gives us a higher percentage of our customer who engages with the brand, whereas other areas that we've tested had really high footfall, but not always the exact customer coming in every time.
That's
so, yeah, it's going really well. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I guess it's just knowing, or the customer being a little bit more knowing and not really going, why is this priced at 100 quid when you can get something similar across the road for 20 quid when they don't quite know what the material is, or like you say, the exclusivity of the product. So about the brands, I mean, I noticed you got Stutterheim, La Paz, which I'm a big fan of. How did you go about selecting the brands?
So Anita and I take regular trips out to Europe. So we primarily go to Paris to our trade shows, where a lot of our brands showcase. And it was really interesting in the beginning, actually, because we obviously went with absolutely no experience in trading within menswear. And before we launched the brand, we obviously had to launch with our brands on board. So we had to essentially convince them that our offering was something really strong and really different. And why should they trust two women in menswear in the whole crowd of, you know, all the boutiques and shops and things that are out there? So basically, it's every 6 months we'll go to trade shows, we'll meet our brands, we'll buy new collections, and we'll scope out new brands. But what we've also found is a few of our brands we've found through things like social media. So over the summer we had a really lovely swimwear brand from Italy called Peninsula, and they were again exclusive to us in the UK, but they were a brand new brand, and they were handmade within Italy, and they were really lovely, high quality, and we didn't actually find them from a trade show. So we kind of do take our inspiration from various different places, but as you can imagine, brands like Stutterheim, who are so well known, they're so incredible, until we were really bolstering our stockist list with amazing brands such as La Paz and Delicatessen and L'Homme Rouge, they obviously knew then that they could trust us, as opposed to being with us straight away. So Stutterheim we actually picked up a couple of seasons in, and we're so happy to have them on board. But for us, we really want to strike the balance between really well-known brands such as Stutterheim and such as La Paz, with those lesser-known brands. So it's always a challenge for us to try and make sure we're offering something fresh, and we keep the, our hashtag is Escape the Ordinary. We want to try and really keep that alive. So really offering something that's really unique to the marketplace and something that means something.
Okay, so Kieran, I'm interested, I'm intrigued. What are your pet peeves when it comes to men's fashion?
When it comes to men's fashion, to be honest, I don't have too many. I think each to their own. Often, obviously, it can get quite funky. But in terms of my pet peeves, I always think that you start to get this generation of men who I think lose inspiration, and they are unsure of how to shop, and maybe they've been kind of, they're getting slightly too old for certain high street stores, so they're wearing shirts and belts and shoes and every day, and it's all you see. It's kind of the same cut shirt with the same blue belt and the same brown belt and the same blue jeans, and it kind of just gets a bit old and a bit samey. Not that you can't obviously wear that and it look amazing, but I think that's my main pet peeve in terms of, you know, 9 to 5 wearing something exciting. I think sometimes men just get stuck in a bit of a rut with what they're wearing in the office.
And that's where you come in, I guess. So are you dating, courting, married?
No, I'm married. Recently married. Yeah, so a couple of months ago.
Okay, so when you met your fella, did you have to tweak his wardrobe? Did you have to sculpt him into this vision that he is today?
I attempted and I continue to try, but no, he's fairly well dressed already himself. So he loves a collarless shirt and a nice jacket and some funky shoes. So no, he's already pretty good, but I think having Western Assembly always helps give him that extra edge. And my brother-in-law, actually, Anita's husband, has always been impeccably dressed. He's very good. But yeah.
So that's where you set the standard, I suppose.
Yeah.
And how many people and family members ask you for mates rates? Like I said, I always had people that would come into the shop and amazingly would ask for discounts, even though I've never seen or heard of them in 5 years. And it's like,
yeah, I mean, it really varies. I think I feel the pressure more when friends are coming in and they're buying something and I'm like, oh my gosh, yeah. And I feel really obliged. But obviously, with such a tiny business, you're like, what do I do?
Yeah.
So not, to be honest, it's not that often. We've had like friends of staff members try and ask when, like, and that's been quite random. But yeah, it's not too often. But yeah, you must remember what it was like. It's just a bit of an awkward moment.
It can be. I mean, I did some kind of loyalty scheme in the shop where if you spent over a certain amount, then you're entitled to discounts. So we tried to reward people that way. But when you have friends and you're in the shop talking for about an hour before you even start going, right, well, what do you want today? Here's some jeans.
Yeah.
It gets a little bit tricky and I always feel obligated. I'm like, oh, mate, just take it. Don't even pay for it. You know, you're good.
Yeah. That's the thing. You feel obliged and you're like, enjoy.
I think it's a self-esteem issue.
They're repping the brand.
Yeah, exactly. Why Western Assembly? As in, where does the name come from?
So the name comes from, well, we actually, when we launched, we picked up a very random name that ended up sounding very American, which was the complete opposite of our aim to push European-specific independent menswear brands. But Western Assembly is because we are assembling a curated collection of brands from Europe in the West, essentially. So it's a Western Assembly of menswear.
Makes sense. Okay, and I think everyone should head over to the website and check out all your brands. So you've got Woolsey,
yes.
The Past. I'm just to mention a few. WesternAssembly.com is the place to go. So
yes.
Thanks, Kieran.
Thank you so much for your time. And Okay. Everyone follow on social as well. There's lots of good stuff on there.
Where can they find you on social?
On social, Instagram and Facebook and Twitter.
At Western Assembly, yeah.
Yeah, at Western Assembly.
Awesome, got it. Great, okay.
Thank you so much.
All right, enjoy your day. Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Kieran Sumra there from Western Assembly. Sadly, we couldn't get hold of Anita. She was supposed to be on the phone and join us for the interview. However, we had technical issues. But Dorothy, you know something about the sisters, don't you?
Yes. I do feel it's time to set the record straight.
Okay, I'm all ears.
The pretty one, the charming one, became pregnant when she was 15 years old and was driven out of the house. In fact, she was so terrified that she would that the baby daughter would bear the stigma of illegitimacy that she decided to change her name and she contracted a disfiguring disease.
Right. Well, you know, what can be more fascinating than that, apart from our interview with Emma Willis? So you ready for this?
Yes.
Excellent. Well, let's just get into it, shall we? Here's our chat with Emma Willis, shirtmaker of German Street. Okay, so on the podcast now we have Emma Willis, the shirt maker of German Street. How are you doing today, Emma?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks for taking the time out to speak to us. So, Emma, what I want to know up front is, why menswear, why not womenswear?
Well, I got involved in the men's shirt business when I left art school, and I worked for a company selling clothes door-to-door in the 80s. And they had a mixture of clothes there, and they had some not so great clothes, and they had some quite okay men's shirts. So I pulled out the men's shirts and I headed for the city, which was, you know, booming at that time. And and I had friends who were working in the city, and I just took the men's shirts and I sold the shirts in the city to different companies. And that's how I originally got started. And I ended up being able to take over a small bespoke. I actually set up my own thing. Following that, I felt there was a demand, and I had the opportunity of taking over a small former Turnbull & Asser bespoke factory in London, the cutter then at the time was not able to do the sales side as well, and he was a former Tamil Nadu cutter, and he had this fabulous little workroom in New Cross with five ladies sewing and him cutting. So I took that over, and that got me on the manufacturing side of it, and really enjoying that side of it. That's how I got started.
Oh wow! So literally going from door to door then. So do you have, I mean, are these houses or offices or both?
It was anywhere where a man might buy a shirt. So, it was actually women's clothes as well for this company. So people, we were all knocking on doors, going into bars after lunch, and it was pretty desperate door to door selling, really.
After that, you then managed to get your own factory after a while. Mm-hmm. So you have a factory down in Gloucester, is that
yep.
right? Now I've seen the factory online. I've seen pictures of it. I've worked in 1,000 factories, Emma. I've never seen a factory like this. So how did that come about?
Well, I live near Gloucester, so I advertised when I wanted to set up my own factory again, and a bigger one in the country. I advertised because actually our area is very creative, the Stroud area, and Gloucester, there's a lot, traditionally it's an area of where the wool trade began. So and it's continued to be an area of very strong in making and the sewing industry, so and textiles. So I put an advertisement in the papers, the local Cirencester, Cheltenham and Gloucester papers, and I got an amazing response from Gloucester, really, really talented people who were very experienced in shirt making as well. And so that's why I started. So then I found my premises in Gloucester, having found the core team of cutters and sewers. And then we were in that place for 2 years. It was lovely. It was a nice. It was an open plan, very light. I always want to make in very light surroundings, because with really detailed sewing, you need to have really good natural daylight. So we were in that place for 2 years, and then we were bursting out of it, and I was strolling past Bearland House. I saw it. I had walked past it many times, but I hadn't really noticed it before, and I suddenly saw this beautiful house. And it said that it was for rent. And so I just thought, oh my gosh, that is our next place. Yeah. And I contacted the estate agents, and I've been available for quite a while. So I was able to get a very, very competitive rent on it. And it is, over 2,000 square feet of beautiful listed building with amazing cornicing and beautiful carved staircases, and hardly needed a penny spent on it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, if anyone's wanting to take a look at this place, it's emmawillis.com, and you can go to the factory section on your website and have a look at the 18th century building. Looks beautiful. So, Emma, how long does it actually take to make a shirt from scratch? So when you get the yarn, you roll it out on the table. What kind of turnaround does it take?
Well, actually, cutting-wise, it depends, obviously, whether you're cutting one shirt or 10 shirts or 50 shirts, or depending on the lays. So as far as the sewing, it takes, each lady can make, an experienced seamstress can make about 5 shirts a day sewing throughout. So and probably to cut a shirt, it depends. If it's making a whole new pattern, that obviously takes quite a lot longer. That can take an hour if you're making a pattern and then cutting it. Or if you're just cutting from a pre-prepared pattern that you've already made, it will probably be a half an hour. You've got, obviously, there's many parts of the shirt that have to be cut. Again, if you're doing plain shirt, it's quicker. But if you're doing stripes or checks, you've got to match everything at all the seams. So it's really right. Skilled cutting. Probably about 5 shirts a day an experienced seamstress can make, and the way we make them with our single needle stitching and very small stitch count.
I mean, it sounds like it's not just handcrafted, but there's a lot of love that goes into these shirts as well. So do the seamstress put their own maker's mark on them or anything like that, or is there some kind of finite detail?
We don't, but definitely everybody takes huge pride in their work and in the work that we produce. So we all, each person operates as their own quality control. We don't actually officially have a quality control person because each person is responsible for doing their part of the shirt as beautifully as they can. And if there is a fault at the end of the line, it will go back and there'll be no accusations. Somebody takes it back and corrects the thing that, you know, that the whatever the small thing might be. So it's definitely huge pride taken in work. We don't reward for speed, although everybody knows that they obviously for the success of the company, everyone needs to make the shirts as quickly as possible. But speed is not the essence when you're training and learning. That comes with experience. The most important thing we all know is the quality of it, and a good service. You know, getting the shirts on time to people, but the quality is everything. With the pride, and I think that's why making with love and care. Certainly, the shirts we make for our injured service personnel are made with a huge amount of love from the ladies, because we're making sort of one or two shirts for a young chap who would never ever be able to afford a bespoke shirt and who's also undergone a very serious injury serving his country. So there's a lot of love poured into those.
This is the Style for Soldiers campaign that you do, is that correct?
Yes, it is. Yes. Yeah.
Have you got any plans to do anything this Christmas? Because it's like an annual thing, I believe.
It is. Yeah, we have a big reunion party for all the injured servicemen and their girlfriends or wives, or they can bring a family member. And so that we're having a great big party. A wonderful company called Alice Made This is making beautiful Style for Soldiers cufflinks. So we'll be giving gifts on the night. It's a great reunion.
Just a little question about the retail element of your business, please, Emma. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've worked in a retail fashion shop for about 3 years myself, and there's so many variables to consider. It's not just high footfall doesn't necessarily mean high turnover. How do you see the high street changing, or how have you seen the high street changing since you opened in Jermyn Street?
Well, certainly this area, much more footfall, but it does continue to be, you know, pretty high-end footfall. You get less window shoppers here. You really, most people, when they come in, they are going to buy something. And also because it's predominantly male, they're tending to shop with a purpose rather than perhaps just musing on what they might buy. But with the arrival of the hedge fund business, about 10 years ago, everything got a lot younger, probably more glamorous. The nightclubs and the clubs and the restaurants and the bars and everything sort of shot up. Everything was being refurbished, and so much younger, still predominantly male clientele around here. Now it's very, very international. It always has been, but it was predominantly Americans and Europeans. Now, huge cross-section of nationalities from all over the world, probably many more Asians now than Europeans, probably, if you did a great generalization. It's very vibrant. It's fantastic. It's a really great place to have a shop if you're in that sort of higher end of things, where, you know, people can afford the very best of British made things. It is a very, very vibrant area.
Excellent. Great. Just lastly, Emma, how many shirts does David Gandy have of yours?
He does have quite a lot, probably certainly 10 shirts. And I think they're his favourite bespoke shirts, he has said. And David is, of course, the ambassador to our charity Style for Soldiers. And he's a fantastic ambassador and puts a huge amount into it and is very popular with the soldiers and their partners.
Emma Willis there. Okay, so that about wraps it up for another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. I'd like to thank my guests Sarah Ann Murray, Kieran Sumra and Emma Willis for joining me. Again, the website is www.menswearstyle.co.uk. That's where you need to go for all the blogs, features, interviews. Like us on iTunes. Give us a nice 5-star review. Write a nice comment. That would be lovely. That will keep me in a job. Follow us on the social at Menswear Style. Any final words from you, Dorothy?
And just
got it. Okay, we'll write it down. Maybe we'll read it out next week. Thanks once again, everybody. See you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.